give them a whole new perspective that they never thought of before. And so it's very cool. And then they're putting this into action. It's changing lives. And I'm just so excited about this. And so I want to just shift the focus for a second, because who here believes that in order to glorify God, the music we make and listen to has to be Christian? Just curious. Is anybody? You're like, I don't want to say the wrong answer. okay, well, here's one little quote. I actually just saw it in my news feed this morning, so I put it in my Evernote. I'm like such an Evernote girl. It's by an author named R.J. Rushdoony, and it said, "At least 2 to 4 times a month, I hear from very able and superior people who, with a deepening faith, feel impelled to enter some form of full-time Christian service." And then he says, "Every honest calling is, however, an area of full-time Christian service." I want to say that one more time because it's so important. And this goes for, like, just moms. I think this applies to, like, kids, students. Like, okay, every honest calling is, however, an area of full-time Christian service. To limit God's service to a particular sphere is to have a non-biblical conception of the sacred and the secular. So that sink in for a second, right? And to limit godly work to a single sphere. This false division has been a significant part of our present cultural crisis. So that's a deep one, but I think it goes so perfectly with a lot of us who believe, like, oh, if I make music, if I make art, if I make film, whatever, it's got to have a giant Jesus stamp on it. Right? And if it doesn't, then it's not glorifying God, and it's not exercising dominion, and it's not doing all these things that, you know, a lot of us have had that. I don't know where we got it from, but it somehow was impressed on us. And I went through that at a time, you know, where I thought, do I get into, like, the Christian market, or do I just, like, do my thing? So I decided, after being raised in that, I was raised in the church and raised in Christian school and raised in that environment, kind of like a little bit of a bubble, I want to say, that I actually want to stay far away from it, far away from the Christian genre, because for a couple reasons. One is that it notoriously sucks, right? It kind of does, right? And second of all, what I observed is that it's just another market. It's just another niche to make money. And, you know, they say, the riches are in the niches. It's 100% true. The Christian music market is just another niche to make money. And you see it, I'm seeing it actually, like, weekly in my newsfeed right now, that there are, you know, these professing Christian bands now saying that they're atheists. So what have you been doing all this time, right? Like, you know, it was a niche. It was a market. So I tend to stay away from that. And quite frankly, my music is just art. It just is. It comes out of me. I'd make it anyways. If I never pursued the music business, I just make it because I have to create. So I just let it be what it is. And every day I'm getting emails. I get emails every day. And there's been some funny ones. I get, "Is Leah a Christian band?" And then I get, "Are you a Christian?" The ones that send me, "Are you a Christian?" I reply to them and I say, "Yes, I am." The ones who say, "Is Leah a Christian band?" I ignore. And the reason why is because if they ever cracked open their Bible and read it, they would see it in my lyrics. Not that it even has to be there, but I'm like, if you read your Bible, I mean, I've seen threads on YouTube and stuff where they're like, "Is Leah a Christian band or is she not?" And someone's like, "Duh, it's like paraphrased all over her music." So, you know, that's kind of how I approach it. But, you know, I have to pick and choose which emails I respond to now. But anyway, I have purposefully chosen to kind of also have a little bit more of a stealth approach, in that I'm glorifying God just by making art itself, right? Because coming from a presuppositional standpoint, there is nothing that you can do that isn't, you know, where God is not active in your life. Like, if you're going to the grocery store, you're shopping to the glory of God. It doesn't matter what you're doing. So, you know, art is another expression of that. And if it's beautiful, that is a reflection of his character. So it does glorify him. And you can also, influence a lot of people just by having relationships, by guiding people, like just behind the scenes. And I mean, you just meet some amazing and really cool people that would never ever walk into a Bible bookstore and buy a CD there. In fact, I don't care if I'm ever in there, but my goal is never to be in a Christian bookstore. So, probably not what you would expect to hear, but and that actually reminds me, do you guys have Christian bookstores around here? Do they have those little listening stations up on the wall still with the headphones? Yeah, okay, so like growing up, there's like this, like, you know, the one Christian bookstore in our town that was like where all the Christian kids would go to get their music. And I remember walking in and there's those little stations up on the wall with the headphones and, like, you know, featured artists and then the CD racks where you could buy it. So it was try before you buy. And I always thought this was messed up because you'd walk up and you're like, which one should I listen to? And there'd be like this laminated little sticky note tag. And it would be like, if you like Eminem, then you'll like this artist. If you like, you know, Metallica, then you like this artist. I was like, that's messed up. Like, here's the knockoff version, right? Of like the better music that you're not supposed to even like, right? So, first of all, what I want to say about that is, number one, we have to change that paradigm, like, right fast. I think one day it'll be the other way around. Not, although it may not have a Christian label on it, but what needs to happen is where people are like, you know that Christian artist that you don't want to admit that you love that's like awesome? Well, here's the secular knockoff version. You know, that I think that'll be how it is one day when we, you know, get to that caliber of quality that it needs to be. And everybody's going to know that it's the knockoff version. And the second thing is, we need to wise up to what actually is Christian art and music and media. And so here's just a thought for you if you're struggling with this idea, is, does a plumber need to quote scripture every time he unclogs somebody's pipes? Like, if he's really going to make a difference, you know, shouldn't he only deal with other Christians' clogged pipes? No? Like, should he even deal with secular clogged pipes? Should he? Like, maybe leave some tracks? Like, if not, why, right? So how can a plumber show the love of Christ and be a witness to the gospel? By being the best plumber on planet Earth. That's how.
And pulling up his pants.
Yes. That does the world a favor. And and how do you become the best plumber on planet Earth? How do you even do that? By increasing your skill level, right? So it's in the skill and the art of plumbing. It's in how you conduct business. It's in your customer service. It's in the way you do invoices. It's in the way you do it. Maybe he starts, you know, taking the courses he needs to take to be the best plumber and dedicating his work to the glory of God. He doesn't become the best plumber by putting a Jesus stamp on it. That doesn't do anything. That's just totally surface. So, and how does a plumber exercise his God-given dominion and influence in that sphere? By leading the plumbing industry. He should set the bar as to what is excellent, what is good, what is amazing, and that everybody else should strive to be like. So I see this being pretty much the exact same in the music industry, in media, in film, whatever form of art. So we have to make better music than the pagans, better film, better everything. And it's not just about for the sake of competition. It's literally Colossians 3:23, whatever work you do, do it with all your heart. Do it for the Lord and not for men. So this is specifically about the condition of the heart. Like, are we making this art to glorify ourselves, or is it glorifying God? That's literally all it is. If you can say, I'm doing this for God, then go do it. Like, make it amazing, make it the best that you can with what you have to work with, and just go do it. Stop thinking so hard about, oh, I don't know if this is acceptable in Christian realms. You know, just go do it and be amazing and increase your skill level. So just a couple of tips I have for using music and money and success as a medium and tool to influence the world around us. Matthew 13, 31 says, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed that a man took and sowed in his field. It is the smallest of all seeds, but when it has grown, it is larger than all the garden plants and becomes a tree so that the birds of the air come and make nests in its branches. When I think of the media and the arts, I think of this verse, because a mustard seed, when planted, I mean, it's tiny, it's insignificant. And it was one dude planting this in a garden that already existed. There was other interesting things already there. It was already full. But he plants this one tiny little seed. And it grows so huge that it becomes bigger than all the other plants. And soon, all the birds of the air and the animals come for shelter in this tree. It's like the thing that people go to. And so, you know, the tree becomes the answer, it becomes the solution, and it's a haven for the rest of the world. And now that's how what I think we're called to be. I think that's our platform, that's what we're to be, both in the church and in media. If you wanna look at what really influences the world, it's media. It's books and movies and culture and film and reality TV shows. That changes the language of people. Like, just watch hashtags, watch how they change on a daily basis. It's crazy. So I think we have a due diligence and like a duty to be in these realms and like doing amazing things. So, this is all great, but how do we do that? And so just two tips for you, and then I'll take some like Q&A, we can talk or whatever, any kind of discussion you want. Number one is increase your skill level and make world-class music or world-class films, whatever. Just increase your skill level. Do what you gotta do to be the best that you can be in your gifting, in your calling. As far as musicians go, all of us artists, we will hit a ceiling at our skill level, and for some of us, we'll get really, you know, down in the dumps. We'll also get just like stuck in writer's block, that kind of stuff. And I recently experienced this, where I was going to start writing for a new album, and like I was so focused on our other business that I was like, oh, I can't get into it. Like, this is so hard. And so I said, okay, that's it. Enough of thinking about writing. I'm going to go take some vocal lessons. Like, totally take the pressure off, just increase my skill level in my vocals. And so I've been doing that for the last 6 weeks, and like, sure enough, the tap just turned back on, and I like can't keep up with the ideas that are coming to me now. I don't know why, but there's something about increasing your skill level. So that's the first thing. And you know, and I think that also implies to the quality of our music and our whatever it is, the quality. We do the best with which you have. You know, my first album, it was not as good as my third album, but that's okay. You just do the best with what you have, and you know, increase from there as you're able. And who here is all a musician? Who makes music here? Lots of people. Okay, yeah. So like, if I don't know if any of you guys have albums or not, but if you're looking to become a recording artist, singer, or songwriter, whatever, what I do is, you know, research and find out like who produced like your all-time favorite album, like which album when you listen to it just sounds amazing in your headphones, and then do research to find out how that was produced, what gear they used, who mixed it. Mixing is like make or break on an album. Like, you can record with like mediocre gear, but the mixing is like, that's where it's at, and mastering too. So, and number two is learn the skill of marketing. And we hate that word. Musicians are like, oh, that's like sales. We hate sales. But here's the deal. You can make the best music on planet Earth, but unless you have a platform and an audience who cares that you made it, you're not gonna make any money. You won't sell CDs, or no one will ever hear it anyways. No one will ever hear it. And for us, you know, I believe that music creators, that's one of our purposes on planet Earth. It's not the only purpose, but it's one of them. And if we're not getting that music out there, I mean, that doesn't change anybody's lives. If it's sitting on your computer, no one's ever hearing it, that doesn't help anybody. So, you know, I think music, it feels good to make it, but it's not meant to be saved for us. It's meant to put out there to bless other people and do its thing. So, you know, marketing is an essential skill to learn, and it is something you can learn. It's not like, oh, I'm good at it, or like I was born good at it or not. It's simply a platform to communicate a message. And I would add to that, it's also super important to learn the skill of copywriting. That's kind of a foreign term to a lot of us, but copywriting is simply the art and science of using words to persuade people to take an action. So think of like when you're on Facebook and you're scrolling through your feed and you see an ad. The copywriting is the headline you see. It's the text above the image. It's the part of the words that tells you what to do. Click here. It's why you should do something. So copywriting is a skill. Somebody said, if you learn copywriting, you will never go hungry. So my next mission here in the next couple of months here is I'm really gonna be working on teaching musicians about copywriting. It's so huge. It is so huge. It doesn't sound like super exciting, but it's actually really fun and it involves the creative part of your brain. There is an art, there is a science, and there's even formulas you can use that work amazing. But it's about tapping into your ideal fan, knowing who they are, entering their brain in the conversation they're already having that day, and using their language, and just basically creating a relationship with them. And that's what I do through email as well. So yeah, copywriting is huge. Now, also giving them incentive to buy from you instead of just streaming it somewhere else. I'm not anti-streaming. I use it as a discovery tool, and I think it's an amazing platform. I have a couple of strategies that I'll be experimenting with this year, such as not releasing my entire album to the streaming platforms, just like a few select songs, for example, so they can find you. But then they, you know, have incentive to come back to your website and purchase from you, at least for a period of time, like when you first release it. And so there's different things like that. So all of this can be accomplished through increasing your skill level, you know, learning a little bit about marketing. You don't have to be doing this 12 hours a day. Like everything I teach my students, this is just, you know, it's the process, and, you know, learning it in small chunks over time, and before you know it, like you're just killing it. You're killing it online. So yeah, just to wrap it up, my best advice to you guys, whatever it is that you create, whatever you make, is just increase your skill level and you will increase your income, and that will increase your influence in the world. So there you go. Yeah. Yeah, any questions? Does anybody want to ask any questions about anything? Social media?
I do.
Build a fan base? Yeah?
So you've done a really good job of just combining something that's truly a hobby and something that you have passion for, and also sort of combining it. You said, you know, you've made sales off of that. A lot of the way you communicate with your email subscriber list and stuff like that. And so you've kind of married the two. Like, there's so many people where we just, a lot of times people just find something to do with their time rather than actually, and that's probably one of the reasons why people get so burned out at work, because they have absolutely no connection to it. And
yeah.
Usually, I'm a firm believer that your vocation should, your someone's true vocation or calling should be something, you know, that it, to some extent it's like something you love and have a passion for. So do you have, do you have like a recommended like methodology for helping someone like tap into like what are those things you're passionate about? Let's see how we can figure out what that is and then see how we can actually like put that in a way and marry that with a marketplace. Is my question.
Yeah, so like if someone was not really sure what they would get into and how they would turn that into like a business.
Yeah. Like, or just someone like tapping into someone's like passion. Is
yeah.
there a recommendation, like how would they do that or how they tap into that?
Usually I would think they kind of know what their passion might be, like if they've at least played around with something.
Right.
So like, I guess it was the same thing when I first did my first album. I didn't know if it would go anywhere.
Right.
I didn't know if I would ever have fans that would ever buy it. But I think most people generally have a sense like I'd like to do that, or I've always wanted to do that. If they don't even have that, we would have to really get into where their interests lie and like what are your dreams, like what have you wanted to do? Is that kind of what you're asking? Like,
yeah,
I think you could probably have like a brainstorming session and see like where are your natural abilities and talents, where your natural gifts lie, and then you can always look at the marketplace, like is there demand for that thing? in the arts and media, there's always a demand for it. So there's always a demand for crew members, even if it's not on the creative side. Like, there's always a demand for cameramen. There's always a demand for artists and creators. Like, there's never too, it's never saturated.
Right.
So yeah, I would probably just hang out and talk with the person, find out their own natural gifts and callings and abilities, and then what is it they would like to do, and then try it out. I mean, you'd have to kind of pick a path.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And then real quickly too, with all that you do on social media and your syndication, are there certain tools or platforms that you use just to automate the syndication? Because you mentioned, you know, you're a musician, you're in love with kids, and you've got other businesses. What do you use as far as social media, as far as like the automation? Do you use outsourcing? Is there certain apps or software that you use just to kind of automate that platform? Because you're obviously not in front of your computers updating your Facebook all day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good question. So that's right. I teach social media in my course. Actually, I have like an entry level thing called Facebook for Musicians. When it comes to social media platforms, by the way, I always teach just dominate two platforms. Don't try to be on 105 platforms. That's counterproductive. Just pick two and become an expert at those and dominate there. And do a little research. Where might my fans be hanging out? For me, they're on Facebook and YouTube. For other people, your audience might be on Twitter or Snapchat or something. That's fine. Just pick two. And as far as scheduling, you can't schedule to all the different platforms out there, but I use Meet Edgar. That's the one. It's like Hootsuite, but on steroids. So you can even post to inside private groups and stuff. So what I'll do is I'll sit around like one Sunday afternoon for like 2 hours, and I just pick a whole bunch of content, a whole bunch of pictures and a whole bunch of things. Some of them have nothing to do with my music. It's just stuff that I like. And I schedule it all. I put it all in it's an app called Meet Edgar. And like I said, it's similar to Hootsuite. You could use Hootsuite. You could use anything like that. And it's awesome. You can manage multiple accounts. You can, I don't know, there's a variety. There's a reason why, there's a few, it's different. And they will show you a comparison, what's the difference between Hootsuite and Meet Edgar. Anyways, that's the one I use. But you can even schedule it right in Facebook. And I mean, results have shown that if you schedule it in Facebook, your post will get seen a little bit more. But I don't think it's that significant. So for me, I like having everything planned out in Meet Edgar. So, because I'm managing a whole bunch of accounts. Like I've got our business, Savvy Musician Academy stuff as well. So I do it all in that app.
Is Meet Edgar an app?
Yes. Well, it's software, yeah.
Right. Software, just automation software.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just it's same as Hootsuite.
Okay.
Same type of thing.
Gotcha.
It's an app, so I don't know. What is it? I don't know.
One of the same apps.
Yeah. Yeah.
From a creative standpoint, I don't know if you're a perfectionist, but how do you get to the point where you're content with something that you've created to put it out there? Are you ever fully satisfied with something?
No.
Do you have a hard time releasing something, or do you talk yourself out of it? Are you ever hypercritical of what you create to the point where it prevents you from creating content?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Yeah. Yeah, hypercritical, yes. I think all creatives, all musicians, they are that way. Super, super critical of themselves. Like, we're our own worst enemy. That's where you need other ears, other people to say, what are you talking about? That's amazing, right? And you're like, okay. You know, and you need a few of those people. But yeah, it can stop you in your tracks if you like get so perfectionist. And I mean, there are bands and artists out there that they don't release it, or it takes them 3 years to release one album. It's because they're being too nitpicky. There comes a point, especially when you get into the mixing part, you have to let go a little bit and be like, you know, if I made this in heaven, it would be different, but we're on earth right now, so it sounds like this is as good as I could get it. And, you know, and then I never listen to it again almost after I release it, because like, well, I might just like the day of the release, but like if I were to listen like a year later, I'll be like, oh man, why did I do that? I got to change that. You know, it's just the way it is. So, and that's the same with the, you know, the producer I'm working with in Germany. He's like a prolific songwriter, and he's the same way. Once they release an album, he'll never listen to it again. He's done. He's sick of it. You've heard it 1,000 times, and you don't want to go back and, you know, critique it all over again. So you just got to let it go, make it the best you can and just live with it and then try to enjoy it. I mean, give yourself permission to just enjoy the artwork you created, like feel satisfied with it. And then, you know, listen to your friends and people around you who do appreciate it. You know, I think it's important to, you know, listen to their opinions as well. And most of them are gonna tell you that it really is awesome if it is. Yeah. Any other questions, or did I explode all your brains with too much information? Yeah.
So, from a musical standpoint, do you see Code of Christian, lyrically speaking, any forms of expression that a Christian ought not to use in terms of like coarse language or something like that?
Ooh, I don't know if I'm the right person to ask about that. I'm in the metal world, so, you know, I don't know. I found certain genres of metal have more coarse language than others. It's very strange because in some of the darker, blacker forms of metal, there's actually less language and more like just dark content, but less language. And then in more of like the, you know, the nu metal and the whatever, I don't listen to those kinds, but like the, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Yeah, it just certain genres they have that. I don't know. I don't know. Like I personally help Marcus.
Yeah, does cussing in music?
Yeah.
For example, I think there could be righteous uses of that. Doug Wilson has a book called The Serrated Edge, where he talks about like in the Bible, biblical and sinful uses of vulgarity, biblical and sinful uses of cussing, like it separates. Vulgarity, cussing, swearing, and profanity. It's like all four categories, and they're all used righteously and unrighteously in scripture.
So not necessarily that,
not like any, like it just depends on how it's used. Like if it's like scubalon is used in a way to glorify God, which is, you know, shit. That's what it is. So
exactly.
It's just, that's what it is. So.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. And so there's just righteous uses of it, and there's unrighteous uses of it. And I would just say you got
to
be very wise.
You
don't want to just use cuss words.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that same goes for content too. Like, you know, I get into like Greek mythology and stuff in my music, like stuff that most Christian artists would never touch. You know, I go fantasy, you know, I love that stuff. For me, it's escape from diaper land, you know, that's what it is. That's what it is. It's all it is. Yeah.
That sounds like an awesome song title.
Yeah. Escape from diaper land. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the wheels are turning now. Yeah.
Does your music and your industry ever open up opportunities for you to share the gospel directly with people?
Sometimes in interviews. I just did an interview the other day. I forget, some radio station in Toronto, and the title of his show is called Christian Music That Doesn't Suck. No joke, that is the title. And so what he does is interview Christian bands whose music doesn't suck, and his audience is primarily non-Christians. So he's trying to help, I guess, offset that whole idea. So we had quite an in-depth conversation. He asked some really interesting questions for me and found out all kinds of things. And so in those kind of ways, I mean, I'm not like preaching like from a pulpit style, but I am sharing my beliefs that come through. And I always explain to them, like, you know, I'm a presuppositionalist, so whatever I believe is, you know, part of my music, just an extension of me. You know, I believe that the expression is part of the expressor, is that a word? And that you can't really separate them. So as far as sharing the gospel, I try to be wise about how I do that too. Like, there have been magazines, like German magazines and stuff that I've been in, and I know in Germany homeschooling is illegal, so I specifically talk about homeschooling when they ask. So stuff like that is really fun, and I enjoy like pushing the envelope just a little bit that way. But mostly I'm just focused on doing my art and like making awesome music the best I can, and I'll just let God open the doors as he wants to open them. And I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried like, am I Christian enough? Am I, you know, proclaiming the gospel? Heck yeah, I am, by making amazing music. That's how I'm proclaiming it. So yeah, any other questions? I feel like people's brains are turning. I feel like the wheels are turning, but the questions aren't coming out. Yeah.
From a marketing perspective, like, what was your strategy like when you first started your brand as an artist? And is it different today for how established that you are? And then maybe some high-level points on what made your brand successful, and then maybe some stuff that didn't make it successful.
Yeah. So my marketing strategy when I first released it was, if you build it, they will come, right? And they didn't come, so I realized, okay, there's more to this. And like, as I don't know if you caught earlier, but I started studying business and marketing in other fields, and I started applying that in music. And now the first thing I would tell any artist is you need to build an email list. That, like, more than any social media platform at all, it needs to be your email list. In fact, your income is directly related to the size of your email list, directly. So, you know, Facebook will only show a certain percentage unless you boost it or show, like, do ads. That's a totally different thing. But your email list, you have direct contact to. So that's my number one strategy that I'm using to this day. I released my last album over like a year and a quarter ago, and my royalties have gone up since then. Usually when you release an album, you'll make a little pile of cash, and then it goes away. And so then you need to make another album, put it out, and then you make a pile of cash, and then it goes away. Well, mine has steadily, it's remained stable and gone up and up. So thousands of dollars a month in royalties doing nothing, I mean completely passive, because of my email list, because I'm directing traffic. Now, I personally use Facebook ads, and I have a lot of in-depth training on this, on how musicians should use this. It's an amazing ninja tool to target super fans who are in love with your music and want to support you. They can't wait. They're like, take my money. That kind of fan. And that's all happening through Facebook ads, directing to my email list, and I'm building relationship, like real relationship. I email them back. They, you know, I have to, you know, pick and choose my times for doing that. But they know, I say, hey, if I can't get back to you, I promise I read your emails. I read every single one of them. And I talk to one person. I don't say, hey, everybody. I say, hey, how are you? How's it going? I'm so glad that you found my music. I bet you and I have a lot in common. We probably have a similar interest, and I know they have similar interests because I targeted those interests in my ad. So they like the same TV shows I like. They read the same books. They're probably people I'd enjoy hanging out with in real life. And so I teach a lot of stuff just in depth with that. So using paid traffic into basically building an email list, developing a relationship with them, with people who truly do want to support you. That's the marketing. That's the high level marketing strategy that I use and I teach. So that's pretty much it.
Thank you.
Yeah. How's it going?
all right. So now you make an album, like, you got other musicians, correct? Like, that you're recording with, like doing your drums, bass, guitars, and all that.
Yeah.
Now when you went that route, like, do you fly out to a studio somewhere? Are they hired musicians? Are they people that you ended up just said, hey, be my drummer and all that, and you're buddies with, and you guys practice and stuff together? Like, how does that work?
Well, for my albums, like, I'm a solo artist, so I've hired musicians for each album. So, and it's been a bit of a lineup change every time. And the last the last album was actually done internationally. So the guitar player and the drummer, they're in Holland. The producer was in, mixer was in Germany. Mastering, I think, was in Germany. My art guy was in Finland. And people were all, we did it all through email. It's crazy. Crazy what can be done on the internet right now. So, and the way that happened, I strategically chose people to play on my album that I could kind of cross-promote to their audiences. Typically, you know, a bass player doesn't get as much of attention as, like, say, a singer does. But it still helped. Like, they're a way bigger band than I am. So I got that bass player from Blind Guardian. I don't know if you guys know who he is. But got him playing all the tracks. And so I hired him. And, you know, a lot of musicians who you think are, like, so busy, they do session stuff. They totally do session stuff. So if you have a chance to hire the session, a guy to play session on your album, it's a really smart idea. Because you can now say, someone bigger, more famous, who has that audience, played on my album. And yes, it does work that way. You will look cooler.
So, but I mean, so you're writing all the music.
Yeah, so I wrote all the songs.
Are you saying, like, I'm hiring you to play on this album, and you're going to play this riff, da-da-da-da-da-da-da?
Yep. Yeah, so the way I do it, and it's totally different when you have a band set up,
right,
is the song is pre-written, pre-production is done. So you would work with a producer, or you self-produce, and the whole song is already kind of mapped out. There's no real surprises. You've got bass lines, you've got drum tracks, like just like fake drums. You have scratch tracks for your vocals. Everything's there. And then it's like writing a timeline for a film. There's no surprises. Like, typically it just goes the way you've already mapped it out. And then they can practice it. They can practice it, and then they go into the studio and nail it, and it's done. And it's always going to sound better. It's maybe slightly different than the demo, but it's not going to sound like a totally different song. So, yeah, that's how we did it. But, you know, it's totally different depending on the situation. Cool. Wow. Well, what time is it? Looks like the other session's going to start in just about a few minutes. So, unless anyone has any other questions. No? Well, it was really awesome meeting you guys.
Thank
you. Yeah.
Thank
you. Cheers. Yeah, cool. Well, I want to like shake all your hands and meet you guys, and I want to hear what you guys are working on for your music and what projects you've got going. It'd be cool. Right on.